All right, welcome everybody to the Fighter Pilot Professor. I am your host, Meta. Super excited to be here for my second video episode. Today we're going to be talking about the new Apple TV series, The Masters of the Air, and the event that it was based on, the combined bomber offensive in World War II. So I'm super excited about that. Super excited about the series as well. And then additionally, we're going to be talking about something related to that, which is grinding, as it were, getting up in the face of devastating odds and struggling uphill. And how do you do that over and over again? So we'll jump right in. I hope you enjoy. All right. So the Apple TV just recently aired the first episodes of the new series, Masters of the Air, which is done by the same folks that did Band of Brothers and The Pacific. So it should be really good. I got a sneak preview, an early showing of the first episode, and it's really awesome. So I'm fired up about it. But it's based on a book of the same name, Masters of the Air, and that's a book about the 8th Air Force in World War II. So we'll talk a little bit today about what the 8th Air Force was up to and why we're doing this, you know, why we're doing this TV show now, and what all this, you know, what all this has to do with anything. So the 8th Air Force was the U.S. Air Force responsible for the offensive bombing campaign in the European theater during World War II. And it primarily focused on strategic bombardment of targets in Germany eventually, but at first in France and other parts of Northern Europe. So the TV series focuses in largely on the 100th bomb group, known as the Blay 100th, because they had some really bad luck and lost a lot of folks. But overall, the book in the series is focused on the 8th Air Force's strategic bombardment campaign. And what's interesting about the strategic bombardment campaign is it is still hotly debated among air power historians like myself about, you know, was it effective? Was it worth the cost? And et cetera, right? And the cost, as a lot of people don't know, that the cost was shockingly steep. So more 8th Air Force airmen died in the bombing campaign in World War II than Marines died in the Pacific Theater in World War II, which is an amazing number. Between those killed in action and those shot down and captured as POWs, nearly 50,000 airmen were either killed or captured during World War II. Additionally, 8th Air Force airmen were less likely to complete their tour of duty and were lost at a higher rate compared to their infantry counterparts of any branch, Marines or Army primarily, obviously. So those statistics alone sort of tell out the challenge that the combined bombing campaign between the British and the Americans faced, right? The other part of it is that most people don't really understand is that, frankly, offensive bombing, as the U.S. Air Force termed it, high-altitude precision daylight bombing, was totally experimental in World War II. We sort of take air power for granted these days, that it's just there and the U.S. Air Force is going to dominate, as we always do, right? But that was not the case then, right? We didn't really know what was going to happen. There was a lot of theory written in between the years of World War I and World War II, and the U.S. Army Air Corps at the time created this school called ACTS, the Air Corps Tactical School. And the whole point of the Air Corps Tactical School was to develop the theory of strategic bombardment into a operational and tactical level way of fighting war for an air force, right? And so these things had never really been tested before. Obviously, in World War One, we didn't do this. Planes were made out of wood and fabric, you know, and they couldn't carry these huge bomb loads. And so when World War II starts and the United States has this high-altitude precision daylight bombing theory, it's the only time that we have the technological capability to really carry it out. And so you couple that with some very hard-fought and deeply studied theories, but again, they're all theoretical things about how industrial nations work and called industrial web theories, etc. And this is what the Air Force goes to war with in 1942. In August of 1942, the 8th Air Force undertakes its first mission. By the end of the war, you know, thousands of American airplanes are participating in these raids deep into Germany. So thousands of bombers, you know, 1,000, 2,000 bombers, 1,000 fighters, etc. And these are huge undertakings, the largest air armadas ever put together in the history of warfare. And although they did have a huge impact on the German people and the German war-making machine, etc., right, even to this day, the outcome of that is debated. I have a theory, which is I think that it influenced the end of the war in a lot of ways. We're not going to go into all that here. It's a lot of history nerd stuff. But just know that this was a unique time in history from the perspective of this was really the first time that air power had tried to do something this large and on this size of a scale in order to sway or even win a war outright. So hope you enjoy watching Masters of the Air, and hope this gives you a little background of what's going on when you watch the show. So one of the things here related to Masters of the Air is the thing that they faced, and a lot of people ask me this, like, the thing that they faced was getting up every day knowing that the odds were against them, right? That they had a long road. They had low chance of surviving their mission. They had low chance of surviving their tour of duty. It was bad, right? And there was stretches in 1943, for example, when the 8th Air Force had to stop bomber operations altogether because the losses were so bad. So what motivated these guys to get up every day and keep doing it, right? Obviously, they're in the military, so there's some, you know, threat of court-martial and death, etc. But what motivates them to do that, even despite all of the things that are happening to them? And that's transferable, I think, a little bit into, like, you know, regular people's daily lives, as it were. You know, how do I get up every day and do something that's hard in the face of these very long odds? If I want to do something that's challenging, I have to get up every day and grind it out, right, in order to reach my goal. And in a lot of cases, there is no guarantee that you're going to reach your goal, right? You may fail along the way. So how do I keep grinding through that process? And I would offer kind of two big ideas for how this happens. And the first one is what I'll call your own value system, right? What is your value? What are your values in this, right? Is this something that you define as a key value, a core value to what you exist as, right? And so values help you define how you're, what drives you as a person, right? And those values then in turn, right, create what it is that you want to do, right? The second thing is sort of the idea of a mission, right? So values and mission, and you know, there's a lot of business speak in here, but these go very deeply into military things as well. But values and mission, right? What do I value, and what is my ultimate goal here, right? And I would offer in a lot of cases when I'm doing these very challenging things that my goal is obviously to complete the challenging thing and go do the thing that I want to do. But what I would ask is when you are in the middle of grinding deeply through all the hard stuff is what are your options? What are your other options, right? Do your other options outweigh the hard, right? And a lot of times, if you have other options that outweigh the hard and your values don't match, then you will quit the thing that is hard along the way, right? But if your values match and your goal is above everything else in your life, in other words, you don't have another option, then why would you quit? Why would you quit that thing? This thing aligns with your life. And so therefore, no matter what, right, you're going to get up every day and keep doing that thing until you succeed, or you're told it's no longer possible to succeed. And at that point, then your values and mission objectives, right, will outweigh the desire to complete that thing. And then you'll have to move on to something else. And we've talked about that before, right? So what I mean by that is, you know, what you have to do then with that is before you set off down the path of something super hard, you have to make sure that your values and goals sort of align up with that thing. Otherwise, you're going to get part of the way into it and you're going to quit, right? So like if running a marathon doesn't line up with your values and goals, right, or you can't adjust your life values and goals to running a marathon, then the odds of you quitting before you successfully run a marathon are really high because it's hard to do, right? So you can apply that broadly to a lot of things in life. You got to align, make sure your values and goals are closely aligned before you jump off into doing something hard. Otherwise, you will not succeed in doing that. And the grind that is the everyday necessity to achieve a hard goal will not be worth it. Hope that helps. Keep sending me your questions. So there we go. We talked a little bit about Masters of the Air. Super excited about Masters of the Air. Frankly, I'm really fired up about it. And we talked also about aligning your values and goals so you can make it through those hard things. Hope you enjoyed. Keep sending me your questions, and I'll talk to you next time.